This is SG2 Perspectives, a conversation with industry experts and SG2 thought leaders about the biggest trends in healthcare and what we all expect that's going to mean for the future of healthcare delivery.
We really took these learnings and went back to the drawing board in terms of what happens next. How do markets start to recover? And as we look long term, how might then the depletion of the commercial population change over time?
Hello and welcome to SG2 Perspectives. We are your hosts, Kelly Richard and Trevor Durin. Today on the show, we'll be discussing our latest thinking on COVID-19's impact on payer mix. We'll be interviewing Tori Ritchie, director on SG2's intelligence team, and surprise, ourselves. Trevor, Tori, and I have been working together to develop SG2's COVID-19 payer mix scenario model since last April. We've spent many hours researching economic trends as we work to create a tool to help health systems weather the economic storm that we may see in the coming year. Trevor, give us an idea of what we've learned since our first version back in June about unemployment and how it's related to COVID surges.
I'm going to talk about it in terms of three things that we learned. And the first and the biggest is what unemployment looked like. When we were building this first model, we only had a couple months of unemployment data. We knew there was a huge outsized spike in April, and we started to see in May plateauing off. And we had a pretty good sense that unemployment wasn't going to go a lot higher after that. Since then, we've learned the mix of who was becoming unemployed was disproportionately a lot of service industry, travel and tourism, retail, ultimately a lot of younger employees and folks who in many cases didn't have commercial insurance provided through their employer anyway. And what we've seen since then is the recovery of unemployment, which actually outpaced the models we were using initially. Only the most optimistic 10% of economists in the country surveyed in May thought that we would be at 8% unemployment by August. Ultimately, the economy outperformed most economists' expectations, but most of that recovery was in less educated, lower skilled employees. And what we started to see at the end of the summer in September and October was a flattening out of that recovery and a plateauing. The second thing we learned is that nationally, we didn't see changes in the unemployment recovery trajectory. It recovered pretty steadily from about the 15% peak down to about 8% where it was in August. But in individual markets, we saw a lot more fluctuation. Our hypothesis at the beginning of the summer was those fluctuations are going to follow COVID surge patterns. And I'm patting myself on the back like, hey, we got it right. They did a little bit, but there were some differences. So in the biggest cities, unemployment really didn't recover very quickly. In LA, you could say that was a lot because of government intervention, keeping a lot shut down. But then when you looked at places like Chicago, there was a lot of government intervention keeping things shut down too. But also the timing and pace of the surges were different. Unemployment stayed persistently pretty high as COVID cases surged. So the biggest cities in some ways had their own pattern of how they moved. Unemployment really never recovered very rapidly in the five or six biggest cities in the country. Then you have the next tier down, which are big cities by anyone else's measure. Houston, Detroit, places where there was a big bump in unemployment, and then it started to recover. But then COVID surged in Detroit's case. They had surged early, and unemployment kind of stopped recovering at about 10%. In Houston, they didn't see an early surge. They saw it late. Unemployment plateaued at about 10%. In big markets, the pattern was unemployment started to recover after the first wave of early shutdowns, but then it hit a floor at about 10%. Then when you look at smaller markets in rural areas, as COVID surged, unemployment really turned around and went the wrong direction. Unemployment would be recovering pretty rapidly in most cases, because in a lot of smaller markets, the service, retail, and tourism industries, with the exception of some niche places that really rely on tourism, isn't an outsized portion of the economy. And so they didn't see an initial big spike in unemployment. But then as COVID cases surged, unemployment went back up. As we think about modeling going forward, what we really saw is COVID cases surge, unemployment responds. It doesn't always follow the pattern of the surge and climb back up, but it at least plateaus out or flattens as COVID cases are surging. The last one, and the one that probably corresponds the most closely to what we were trying to answer building this model, is how much does unemployment matter for the loss of commercial insurance? And what we projected at the beginning of the summer was that the loss of commercial insurance was going to lag because of furloughs, because of COBRA, because of the mix of the type of jobs that were experiencing the most unemployment. We got it right through the summer where we didn't see a big loss of commercial insurance, but both anecdotally talking to health system leadership teams this fall and what we're seeing in earnings data from commercial payers where they report enrollment, and it's always rolled up into big buckets that makes it a little tough to feel like we have a perfect finger on the pulse, but commercial's down. United showed about 2.5% loss of commercial enrollees. Anthem about 1.5%. half. Humana, which has a really small commercial footprint, saw an even bigger loss. And we're hearing the same thing, 1% or 2% commercial loss moving to government payers from some of our biggest health system partners. So those are the three biggest forces that helped us build the next generation of the model.
And Trevor, something that I was thinking about as you were talking is the idea that the smaller markets maybe didn't get hit as hard the first time, or they got hit and then they resurged. Something that we discussed as we were talking through this is that some of those smaller markets were really getting their first surge in the summer, which is an interesting way to think about it, because we had kind of assumed that everyone got hit, but their surges were smaller. Maybe the surge that's happening in the summer, or maybe the one that's happening kind of right now, really might be considered that first surge in those markets. And that's something that we had to consider when we were thinking through initially, hey, are we seeing one big surge and then maybe a few bumps in the road coming up?
The economy is going to respond differently the first time COVID comes through. We've only kind of gone through two bumps, and now we're starting to see this big fall flu season surge. We're going to have to learn what that means in terms of corresponding unemployment. We have enough time and data to look at the first two bumps. We're not sure what this big fall winter surge is going to mean.
And one other thing that I think we could see in the future is we did get a fairly significant injection of stimulus into the economy from the government, and trying to understand how much of the resiliency of the economy was being propped up by the stimulus that we got versus what is that going to look like when that's gone, or if it's not increased as much as it was the first time around. That's another consideration.
Totally. That's a good tee up to dig into the future unemployment scenarios we created, because the zombie companies that are kind of being held up right now through government stimulus, how bad their future looks is going to have a big impact on the future unemployment trajectory. So Tori, why don't you take those learnings and pivot them into, all right, what are the three unemployment forecasts that we created?
So we went back to the drawing board and we reassessed our forecast curves. We created three distinct realities that you can select when modeling unemployment scenarios in this tool. The first of which being an optimistic recovery curve. This is for communities that really haven't felt lingering unemployment effects stemming from the virus. These are communities that are likely to get back to those pre-pandemic levels of unemployment by the end of 2021, largely because they might be largely unionized from an industry perspective. And therefore, folks that did lose their jobs, didn't lose healthcare coverage, that commercial coverage population wasn't depleted the same as some of their counterparts. It could also just be industry mix. Perhaps these are communities where they're working in office-based settings and they were more easily able to work from home as opposed to laying off workforce that had to come in person. We then have our plateaued recovery curve, and we believe that this will apply to the bulk of communities across the nation. These communities have felt some impact on unemployment based on the virus. They have been hit, but not in a debilitating way. So these communities, they don't rely strongly on tourism or the hospitality industry, and they have more of a mix from an industrial perspective to really sustain those commercial enrollment numbers throughout the course of the pandemic. By the end of 2021 with this curve, you're not quite to that pre-pandemic level of unemployment, but you have seen a bit of a rebound. You've started to crawl out of that valley that COVID put you in, and you're really on your road to recovery, which we anticipate at some point in 2022 or beyond, you'll really be back to that pre-pandemic level. Finally, we have a recession curve. This curve is appropriate for those that have been hit hard by the virus. These are your Atlantic cities, your Vegases, the communities that truly depend on a workforce that comes into a restaurant or a hotel or a factory. And because of the virus, they were unable to complete those jobs. And thus, that commercial population has really taken a hit over the last year. With the recession curve, things don't start looking up really until towards the end of 2021. You continue to see this slight chipping away at the commercial population through the end of this year and into 2021. And it is appropriate for those that are continuing to just get slammed by the virus today. Another economic impact to think about is stimulus packages. A number of markets are hanging on because of stimulus packages passed earlier this year. Now that we know the outcome of the election and we recognize there's likely to be a split government, we have to think about how realistic is it for really robust stimulus packages to be passed to sustain markets moving forward. This is something that should absolutely factor into your selection of one of those forecast curves.
Tori, great outline of the way we're thinking about the possible futures. But that's kind of the big picture that people are going to layer on top of their local market reality and their local market expectation for COVID surges and the corresponding unemployment impact. Kelly, in building this, we looked at a bunch of different individual markets to try and make sure the stories kind of synced up. Give us a couple of those local stories and how we think those scenarios could play out differently in different markets.
Trevor, you kind of touched on this a little bit when we were discussing how different markets were reacting to a COVID surge. And when we're thinking about this, I really like to think about it in terms of small markets in large markets. If we're thinking about a larger market, and let's go with Chicago, for example, I live there, so it's particularly salient to me. If we're thinking about the fact that they got hit pretty significantly back in the spring, right? We started at a really low unemployment rate back in January at less than 4% and shot up to over 18% unemployment. And now, if you're thinking about Chicago in the most optimistic of scenarios, say that we're about as resilient as we can get, and that's talking about that the reality of that optimistic curve that Tori described, we're still thinking about a pretty significant bump in unemployment from October to November to December. That leads us to, in November, about 15%, December, about 18%. And there's a couple of reasons for that. Keep in mind, this is all thinking of this from a strong fall-winter spike. I think we're already really starting to experience it. The idea here is that some of the impact or some of the factors that were being staved off by stimulus, economic stimulus, or the reprieve that we got in the summertime, we had people on furlough. We're starting to see some of those things fall to the wayside, and the unemployment is going to be a little bit more severely impacted by the COVID surge. We have a little bit of a bump here going into December and January, but we're comfortable with that because unfortunately, it looks as though we're probably going to start to feel the impact of that fall-winter surge. Even in an optimistic scenario, you're going into the first of the year with a pretty high unemployment rate, very service-oriented large city. And then as we go throughout the year, we start to see a recovery, but we haven't really recovered through the end of next year. In December of 2021, we're still around that 10-11% unemployment rate. So in contrast to Chicago, you have another example of a small market, which would be Macon, Georgia. And we're looking specifically at Bibb County. Macon's interesting because it has enough of a population to have large enough numbers to make the comparison and kind of really get a good idea about trends. But it does kind of follow some of the same demographic characteristics as a more rural area. And my understanding is that Georgia, specifically the rural areas, are getting hit pretty hard right now by COVID. If we compare for Macon, Georgia, the least optimistic scenario, so that 2021 recession, we're looking at an outcome that is, even in the worst scenario, much more optimistic than one of those larger markets like Chicago. If we're seeing a strong fall surge, and I think they're having that right now, with more moderate unemployment impact, you're looking more or less at a 12% around April in terms of unemployment. They're getting hit right now. We're seeing that going up to about 9%. Maybe a little more as this starts to go into the new year. So we're looking at about 9% January, February, and then we start this slow recovery to about 7 or 8% by the end of next year. And that's not great.
Right.
It's not the same as the 10% or more that we're starting to see in these larger markets. It's a little more resilient, probably because the economy is a little less diverse in terms of having service industries and things like that. So having said that, though, if you are a health system and you're losing a couple percentage points in commercial payer mix, that's still going to hit you pretty hard. It's a smaller impact, but the impact feels bigger, likely, in those rural markets from an economic perspective and from a financial perspective for the health systems that it's impacting.
Yeah, well said.
Trevor, let's look into the future here. We're looking into the next 3 to 4 months. And what do you think are the things that are going to happen, or what will we be paying attention to as we think about future iterations of this model and predicting what payer mix is going to look like in the next year or two?
You could have said, Trevor, what are you going to be sending me data deep dive emails about at 10 o'clock at night that I'm going to scan and pretend I've really read them deeply to make you feel better? And here are the things that I'm going to be paying attention to. What are future surges going to look like? How bad are they going to be? But more importantly, what's the corresponding unemployment going to look like? And a fair amount of that unemployment response is going to be on local governments. And breaking news here, we're just kind of going through a pretty contentious election. And many of those shutdowns had political implications, and politics impacted the degree of shutdowns in many places. That might change going through the winter. There's going to be other policy impacts too that are going to impact payer mix more broadly, but it's going to reverberate across some of this, which is the future of the ACA. Open enrollment in 2020 is also going to force some kind of organic shifts here. On the Medicare Advantage side, this is a little easier to think through because big unions, a lot of particularly like big teachers union for states, buy group plans. They're already seeing a big shift into group plans. It saves money. There's going to be the same type of pushes on the commercial side. Employers are going to organically shift some of this share and some of the payer mix going through 2020 open enrollment. We'll hope to start to see some of those shifts and get a feel for it in the beginning of the year. And at the same time, we'll also know about timing of the vaccine. We don't know how quickly that's going to impact the economy and allow consumer confidence and safety to be high enough that it impacts the economy. But we'll probably have a better sense in 3 or 4 months. That's what we're trying to pay attention to.
Well, we have a lot to consider and lots of things up in the air as we look into what payer mix is going to be looking like in the next 2 to even 5 years.
I've heard so many different opinions from health system leaders too. On the one hand, they'll say, oh, 1 or 2% move in commercial coverage. That's at the market level. That's not impacting who's coming in the door. We can make up for that by still trying to keep the same internal mix, by keeping the same sort of processes we have to balance the proportion we have of different payer mixes in our margin generating services today. So I've heard one side say we can handle a 1 or 2% shift. On the other hand, there's a lot you can't control. We don't know how people who had commercial insurance and then move on to Medicaid or move on to an ACA product where they have a lot more out-of-pocket exposure are going to behave. We don't have historic data to show us that. Data from the last recession shows people with no insurance moving on to Medicaid, and we have a pretty good sense of how they behave. Our chart looks kind of flat on unemployment, but there's still a lot of uncertainty in how much that impacts health system business.
Right. And it's interesting that you bring up behavior by patients or the consumer. I think affordability is another interesting aspect to keep in mind here. If we have large groups of people that are unemployed or underemployed, what does that mean for premiums? What does that mean for out of pocket? How does that ultimately impact how many people are insured? How many people choose to be insured? We're looking at a new administration. What impact will that have on Medicaid expansion? We have a lot of factors to really work into our predictions as we get past even just this short term month over month, but what the next 5 years is going to look like.
Yeah, you got it.
Great. Thanks, Trevor. And thanks, Tori. If you like what you're hearing, please also listen and subscribe to our colleague, Dr. Tom Villanueva's Modern Practice podcast on Vizient's Medical Leadership Channel. Tom discusses key healthcare trends through the clinical leadership lens. You can find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you for listening and stay healthy.
This has been another great episode of SG2 Perspectives, where industry experts and SG2 thought leaders explore the drivers of tomorrow's healthcare strategies to inform today's decision makers. Contact us anytime by sending an email to sg2perspectives@sg2.com. We'd love to hear from you. SG2 revolutionized healthcare demand forecasting with the Impact of Change forecast, and today, we're the industry's premier strategy advisory firm. To learn more, visit sg2.com. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you again soon.